Who's Boris?
Our prime minister, you moron.
What's a prime minister? Is that like your president?
Yes.
I thought you guys had a king over there. Didn't you have a queen or something? Isn't she?
No, we have a queen, yes.
So the queen rules everything with an iron fist.
No.
She goes around in her chariot. You have to, if you see her, you have to bow, right? Hey, what's going on, guys? On this episode of Drugs and Stuff, we have a drugs in the news. There's a female boxer who tested positive for two different substances that were banned. She claims that it was from having sex with her boyfriend who was using these compounds. After that, we want to discuss how much fat can you gain during quarantine? Well, there's one guy who gained 225 pounds. We've got that story. After that, we've got listener questions. T3 at a low dose. We have HGH frag versus regular growth hormone. Plus a lot of leg training and a bunch more. So stay tuned. We're going to get to all that right here, right now on Drugs and Stuff. Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome back to Drugs and Stuff. With Dave Crossland, I'm Scott McNally, and our programming is brought to you by TrueNutrition.com. You could use our code ADVICES, and we're also brought to you by GetAzoth.com. You can use our code, ADVICES10, either there or at Amazon to get a discount on their products. Dave Crossland, I want to start out by saying we do have some good drugs in the news. I also want to let you guys know we are going to commit to putting this show out on Mondays now. So you can tune in to Drugs and Stuff. It'll be out every Monday morning. That's going to be our goal moving forward. The show's kind of bounced around a little bit. It usually came out on Tuesdays, possibly Fridays. But now we are committed. I think that that's going to help with viewership to let people know, you know, where the show is going to be. So every Monday morning, you can tune into a new episode of Drugs and Stuff. Last week, we had some really good feedback on the episode we did with Victoria Felkar. And we talked all about the weightlifting scandal that's going on. This week, Dave, we have some crazy stuff. Now, one thing. You brought this to my attention, and now I've heard it several times. We need to go to this lady first. Where is she?
Oh, the failure woman.
Yeah, I just had this pulled up. I'll have to dig it out again. So basically, she is a boxer. She tested positive for two substances. One was GW501516, carterine. And the other one was letrozole. Now, she said that she wasn't guilty of this. She said that she didn't use these things. Where is it? Here it is.
Yeah, she said that it transferred during sex.
Transferred during sex.
And she's a U.S. boxer.
I'm just relieved that USADA saw my case very unique and gave me a no fault. I had these prohibited substances in me. I was at complete shock and had no idea where they had come from.
32-year-old flyweight. Her name is Virginia Fuchs. She had failed the test and is blaming it on sex with her boyfriend. So
it was an out of competition test, so there is that to it. Not that it makes much difference, but it was an out of competition test.
Okay. It says the anti-doping body said Fuchs' partner has been using therapeutic doses of the two substances, and that Fuchs bore no fault or negligence for adverse findings.
A therapeutic dose of letrozole?
And therefore, she will not be banned. Huh.
What is a therapeutic dose of letrozole for a male?
Yeah. That and, well, is there a therapeutic dose for carterine?
No, it's a research drug. It's not even passed for human consumption.
Yeah. apparently.
All research was abandoned on it. It's not even in process. They've stopped it. They're not doing anything with it.
Really? Huh. She looks pretty tough.
Yeah, carterine, I mean, this is one of the big sort of debates around usage. Carterine When he did the animal studies, it caused cancer in basically every study they ever did. But the doses used were very, very high in comparison to what we would use as a sports supplement.
Right, right.
But because of that, they stopped all development of it. They just haven't bothered developing it any further.
Which makes sense, man. I'm looking at her.
Yeah,
she looks like she's got some delts. She's got some biceps. She's got some pecs, dude. This chick definitely lifts weights. Where letrozole and carterine come into that, I'm not sure. But she looks tough, man. Have you seen what she looks like?
Have you seen the one picture where they used in the art till where she stood there with the belt over her shoulder? I presume she's won a title at some point if she's not a current holder of a title.
Yeah.
I had no idea that you could get contaminated through intimate contact. And I'm just, you know, I've learned a lesson about this now. And I want, you know, other athletes to learn from my mistake.
It's a strange combination of drugs.
Sure.
And then two, the transference idea is just so ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, if gear and anti-estrogens were transferable through sex, then every bloke on gear's missus would have a beard.
Sure. Yeah.
It's just absolute bollocks, but it goes back to what we were talking about last week about WADA just being a PC movement and not actually an effective tool or even a tool that tries to be effective. Hmm. How they believe that bollocks is there's only one way that's happened is somebody's got a big drink.
So we have, who is this? The USDA chief says, we strongly believe this case and others like it, including meat contamination and prescription medication contamination cases, should be considered no violation. So they're putting this right in there with like the guys who, you've known a guy who tested positive for Tren, didn't you?
We did it in Drugs in the News. The guy that, at least the meat contamination from Tren has some science to back it up.
Yeah.
You know, would it really cause a positive fail in a test? I doubt it, but at least you've got argument there. You've got a scientific process that proves the process is transferable and that Tren metabolites do pass down the food chain.
Yeah.
So you have that, because if you remember, we were talking about bunny rabbits on Tren.
No, I remember this, yeah.
But this has, as far as I can see, no grounding in any research has been possible.
Now, apparently, WADA would have banned her for these substances for 4 years. Now, Fuchs narrowly missed out on qualifying for the Rio Olympics in 2016, but she now has her sights set on next year's delayed Tokyo Games, so she could be cleared to compete.
Well, the thing is, I mean, you can argue that she shouldn't compete and that she should be banned and all the rest of it. And if that's your standpoint, that's fair enough. But at the end of the day, they apply this sort of liberal ruling to everybody in these circumstances.
Okay.
Unless they're from a broke-ass country with no money. So, you know, she's not going to be the only one that's getting a flyby with this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But it just underlines what we discussed last week about how WADA really are a fucking joke.
Yeah, the more stories we do here, the more I see that it is just it's just a facade. It really is.
It's a PR placebo. It is there to say to the general public who have very little understanding on this subject, and why would they? It's not something they're going to experience in everyday life,
yeah,
that we are doing something about this awful problem. When in reality, it's corrupt, it doesn't work. They don't even really have a full understanding of what... I mean, they tried banning caffeine at one point.
Yeah. And you know, you make a good point, too. You talk about the perception of the general public. There was a time when all of us, including competitive bodybuilders at the highest level in the IFBB, there was a time when all of us were on that other side, that we were part of that general public. And then we all eventually, we shifted, we found the dark side. And let me tell you, from two guys here on the show that are very familiar with the dark side, that it's easy to say now from this position that it is everywhere. It is everywhere. That I think that there's people that are in under the belief that the Olympics are going to be clean, that an organization like WADA is going to keep that stuff out. But man, we're just getting so many stories about this. It's just nonstop. How many people are, you know, have these weird tests that show back positive for, you know, very specific drugs that their boyfriend was using or they found in food, you know?
The other thing as well with it all is that people forget that doping in sports is not just about steroids.
Yeah.
You know, doping in sports covers stuff like beta blockers, calming drugs, particularly for sport. You know, the use of nootropics in professional chess.
Yeah.
Things like this. So, you know, there's a whole range of doping. It isn't just steroids.
Absolutely.
You know, there's dopings to keep people calm and they're in precision sports and all the rest of it. But yeah, I mean, it is a complex subject. And at the end of the day, when you speak to most people, the concern really should be the health of the athlete.
And I think that that's where this is coming from. You know, at the end of the day, if they do have this and people are still using, at least they are kind of being regulated. They can't just do everything. They can't just take everything under the sun, or they'll end up like professional bodybuilders can, you know?
Yeah, but the argument there is that it's not, one, fairly done, and two, they don't monitor health impacts. And some of the drugs that they criticize and some of the implications that they put on, like the one that, you know, the female that's having to use testosterone suppressants because her natural testosterone is high.
Yeah.
That woman was born with that genetic makeup, which means her hormonal system is designed to work in that way.
Sure.
So by reducing her testosterone, what you are actually doing is risking her health.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can't apply a normal person's range to someone who has genetically mutated the way their hormones work.
Yeah.
Because their whole system is based around that.
Yeah.
So everything that regulates their hormonal control is based around the fact that their test levels run higher than what is normal for a female. You reduce that test into normal female ranges, and what you're effectively doing is giving that woman low testosterone. So it isn't based around health. It's based around basically hypocrisy and bullshit. But there have been proposals to look at it from a point of view of there is no banned substance,
mm-hmm.
but you must meet these health markers in order to compete. And that itself would regulate, because if people weren't healthy enough to compete with their blood markers and the health tests, then you're not going to be able to take harsh drugs. You're not going to be able to take damaging, harmful drugs because you're not going to be healthy enough to compete.
I think that's a much better idea, if you ask me. You know, I mean, you come into, there will be people that could genetically say handle an oral better than someone else's liver can handle an oral. But that, there you go. I mean, that just means that somebody else was genetically superior to begin with.
Exactly the same as genetics of someone being a faster sprinter and having a great number of white or red twitch muscle fibers, or longer limbs or shorter limbs. You know, deadlifters with long arms pull better than deadlifters with short arms.
Yeah.
You know, because the body composite, the body biomechanics. So, you know, it's just another edge on genetics. The toleration of a drug is just another edge on genetics.
I agree.
And previously, you know, outstanding sports persons have often been those that are on the verge of sort of what you could class as genetic mutation.
Sure.
They have a certain set of genetics that is mutated from the norm, which is why they excel at certain things.
Right.
And so I think if you're going to be a drug controlled sports federation, or you're going to manage drug use within a sports federation in a way that you're not going to allow it and you're going to police it, that's fine.
Yeah.
But then you've got to do it. And the issue with WADA is they don't do it. Just for argument's sake, I qualify for the Olympics. So we won't pick a sport because I cannot think of anything I could actually do to that level. But just say I maybe eating pies. So I'm qualified an Olympic pie eater.
Okay.
Okay.
I could see that.
And I'm taking MK677.
Yeah, it helps with your eating.
This is a very basic thing.
Yeah.
Now, that's classed as cheating. That's banned by WADA. I'm not allowed to use it in my pie eating.
Sure.
But I have a doctor that has written a prescription for me for MK677 because I struggle sleeping and my growth hormone naturally is a bit on the low side.
Yeah.
Right? And at that point, MK677, I know it's not, but just for argument's sake, is a legitimate treatment for those conditions. I present that medical exemption to the Olympics.
And then you can use it. Absolutely.
I'm not independently examined.
Yeah.
I'm not checked, physically checked in person to see if I have a use for that drug.
Sure.
It's all done off the paperwork that's presented.
Sure.
And if the doctors that check it look at it and go, well, yeah, MK is a legitimate use for that. A bit unusual, but they're not anything wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm past to use it.
Yeah, I've seen that with many medications. So, yeah, it definitely brings up a lot of a lot of interesting question. And I feel like it's been to me through the repetition of seeing these tests and these failures, and then just kind of skirting through it over and over again. It's painting to me a much clearer picture now. I have another story here, Dave.
Before we move on, can I just touch on something? Do you remember when they drug tested the Olympics? Sorry, not the Olympics, the Olympia.
I do, yeah.
Do you remember what the result of that was?
Basically, mostly everybody didn't look as good.
And what was said afterwards by the sponsoring companies?
What did they say?
Do that again, we're not sponsoring it.
Did they really?
I think it was something like a 30-pound or a 20-pound average weight drop across the competitors.
It's terrible, yeah.
So why would the Olympics want an effective drug banning policy? Because the same applies.
Yeah.
Why would Adidas pump millions into an athlete if they're just going to be a little bit better than average?
You're going to be mediocre. We could do that. We could see that ourselves, you know.
It's not a spectacle.
Yeah.
So they don't want drugs to be banned from sports. They just want to make it appear like they're trying to ban drugs from sports.
Yeah, yeah.
It's bad for business.
All right. So our next story, Dave, this is not directly related to drugs. More so, this is related to fitness. This is a gentleman, 26 years old, from the Wuhan province.
I didn't know we were doing this one.
He gained a little weight, Dave. He gained a little weight during the quarantine. Turns out...
he gained you!
He literally did. So he was quarantined, it says, for 5 months while staying at home to avoid COVID-19. I've got a picture here. Let's bring this up. Gained 225 pounds in 5 months. Now, I know in Wuhan... they were having people, you weren't even allowed to leave your house. They had people coming to bring food to you. Could you imagine how much food they were bringing this guy? Why didn't they stop?
Yeah, but he wasn't exactly small to start with, was he?
I don't think so, no.
He was about 400 to start with. Wow. He was a big boy in the first place. I think he's currently 600 and odd. And he gained... Go on.
You broke up 600 and what?
616 pounds. So he was just under 400 pounds before he started.
Wow. Huh. How does that happen?
That's a big boy.
How do we let that happen?
That's a big boy.
Yeah, that is.
I mean, I can eat, but Jesus.
Does it really have to be that much food, do you think? Do you think is it going to be genetic for some people? Or would you have to really try to gain that kind of weight?
There's not something, Scott's probably better on this than me. It's not something I've got a great deal of knowledge on. I do remember there's been a lot of debate about fat genes or fat genetics.
Okay.
But I do recall there was something I watched, and they were transplanting fecal matter into people, and it affected
oh, yeah.
how they managed their fat gain.
Yeah.
and their metabolic rates and all sorts. So there definitely are influences outside of calories in, calories out.
Yeah.
Definitely. And yes, some, and we saw it in, we spoke about this when we spoke about epigenetics. We saw this in the Dutch famines, that there was a higher level of obesity in the children that were born via the Dutch famines because their bodies had temporarily adapted. So there are genetic influences without doubt. There are a range of metabolic rates and metabolism. So it isn't always as simple as calories in, calories out.
Yeah.
But then again, this is someone who sat on their ass all day and had nothing else to do but eat. And I mean, I think a lot of people will relate to, if they've been in full lockdown, relate to eating out of boredom.
Yeah.
It's very easy to do.
Yeah, I could definitely, especially in a situation like a 5-month quarantine. So he was a, says he was a worker at an internet cafe. It says he had to be rushed to the hospital by an ambulance early in the morning after fall. Now, this is what I don't get. After falling critically ill because of a sudden increase in weight. So he wasn't even going to go. He was just going to ride it out, basically. He was going to show up back to work with 225 additional pounds. Fallen critically ill because of his sudden increase in weight. Rushed to the hospital. I don't know what that means.
How did they get him in an ambulance?
How did they get him anywhere?
No, I mean, realistically, how did they get him in an ambulance?
Yeah.
I mean, that's... Chinese aren't particularly now renowned for being big people.
Yeah.
How the hell did they get him out of an apartment into an ambulance?
It's a good question, man.
I want to know that now. That's really, 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 really intriguing me. Like, how do you move someone who's... I mean, I've seen a few programs of people statesides where they've literally had to cut a hole in the side of the house
I've
to get the person
too.
Out.
Yeah, yeah.
So I do wonder, how the hell did they get him out?
Let me see here. So if we take 5 months, and let's say, we'll just say there's 30 days. That's 150 days. And he gained, let's see, so 225 divided by 150. So he gained 1.5 pounds a day on average. A day.
Fuck's sake.
A day. That's a lot to have gained.
That's 10 pounds a week.
10 pounds a week.
Well, more. More, sorry.
Yeah, 1.5 times...
10.5.
Let's
go 10.5.
Okay, so 10.5. Let's say, what does he gain in 30 days? 45 pounds in a month. That's a lot of weight.
That's an incredible rate of gain.
Yeah, I wonder how he would do if they just fed him like protein and gave him some Tren. Would he have gained that much muscle? Would he have been like the next, you know, Hidetada Yamagishi or something? I don't know.
Hey, you know what? There's... End of day, guys that generally gain fat usually gain muscle fairly easily as well.
Yeah. Yeah. What if they strip that off now? I mean, but you know what? He hasn't been walking around and carrying that weight. He's probably just been sitting on his butt the whole time. I don't know about you, man, but I'll tell you what. This whole quarantine thing, I found myself, if I haven't left the house to train, well, I mean, I train from home too. Well, let's just say on days that I don't work out, I could like sit here all day, man, in the same spot, you know, walk my dog around the block, maybe, and that's it.
It's
easy.
I found generally through the lockdown, I've been fairly all right, not had any major issues. It's not really bothered me, but for some reason, this sort of halfway house we're currently existing in.
Yeah.
Where we can go and do stuff, but you can't quite do stuff. And I'm finding that worse.
Yeah?
Yeah. I'm right itchy at the moment, like unsettled and not at ease with the situation. Not like an anxiety thing or anything like that. Just sort of like, need to do something, want to do something.
Yeah, I think we all are kind of feeling that, you know.
But when it was... You can't do anything. When I didn't have a choice, I wasn't bothered. But now I've got this sort of half choice. Yeah. It's like, don't like that.
Yeah. Well, you've also stayed in the same place for a really, really long time, which I feel like that wears on you after a while too, you know?
True. I mean, I even drove 35 minutes for a coffee the other day.
Ah, no kidding. Do you have Starbucks over there? Like by you?
We do. We have Starbucks and we have Costa. I would have said Costa Coffee is probably bigger than Starbucks from a point of view of availability anyway.
Okay.
I'm not keen on Starbucks.
I'm into it now. Victoria got me into it. So when she's here, we make regular visits to Starbucks. We get Cafe Americanos.
I used to have a habit of going to Starbucks and giving them really stupid names.
Yeah?
Just so they had to write it on the cup.
Oh, when they're like, "In who's that for, sir? What's your name? What would you like? Tell me, what would be one of your names?"
Aloysius.
Aloysius. Okay, Aloysius, pull around.
Oh, I'd just like to see him trying to spell it. That was the best bit.
You dick.
Yeah, well, it occupied my simple brain.
All right, listen, let's get to a quick break. We're going to come back. We're going to answer listener questions.
Learn from my mistake.
Hey, what's up, guys? We're going to break into this podcast real quick to do a couple things. We're going to shout out our great sponsors, but also I wanted to shout out you. Yeah, you. Thank you for listening to our programs, guys. Wherever you are right now, maybe you're driving in your car or you're at work, or maybe you're still quarantining, whatever you're doing, maybe you are robbing a convenience store right now and you're listening to an Advices Radio podcast. If that's the case, be safe and please don't shoot anybody. But thank you for listening to our shows. Maybe you're at the grocery store. I do a lot of my podcast listening at the grocery store nowadays. It allows me to put my headphones on and not have to talk to a lot of people because people are weird, especially nowadays. And, you know, I can get entertained and educated while I'm buying apples and eggs and whatever else. If you're buying Twinkies, Just put them back. Anyways, guys, I also want to shout out our sponsors, TrueNutrition.com and GetAzoff.com. True Nutrition, guys, I want to tell you, if you didn't know, they have a lot of really basic health supplements that all of us are using. So if you want to support our programming, check out their stuff like their fish oil. They've got fish oil caps, and you're going to use those anyway. If you're not, you really should be, but you can support our programming by buying stuff like fish oil from True Nutrition. And of course, you got to use our code ADVICES, and then that lets them know that you support our programming and that you're hearing this. And, you know, it lets Dante know that he should, you know, continue supporting us. And also, I got to say, I'm really grateful to have True Nutrition by our side. You know, they're a great freaking company and they are owned by awesome people. Dante Trudell is just a tried and true, honest, trustworthy individual, one of the most respected human beings that I know in our sport. And he's freaking brilliant too. Stop asking me to get him on one of the podcasts, by the way. He doesn't like doing podcasts. That's just his thing. So we got to respect that. There's some people like that. There's a few of them out there. Anyway, yeah, guys, you can support our programming. Check them out because they have all sorts of stuff from there to great proteins to, you know, intra workouts, pre-workouts, post-workouts, whatever you guys need. Check out True Nutrition and use our code ADVICES. Everything's third-party tested, high-quality supplements. And our new sponsor, GetAzoff.com. You can either go to the website. That's great if you're international. If you want to buy, you know, the product Azoth itself, go there. Great nootropic blend. Or you can go to the Amazon link, which we have in the show notes. I love what Azoth stands for. You know, their slogan is get shit done. And realistically, I feel like that's what we want to do, right? We want to, and here's the reality of it is that life is short, right? We only have so much time. There's only so many hours of the day. And you do have to take downtime, but when you are going to be productive, I found that nootropics have been really beneficial for me. On certain days, I love to have them and that they have helped me to get a lot more done than I would have otherwise. It's not like a speed thing. It's not like you're, you know, racing along. I'm making calculated decisions at a faster rate. I'm typing quicker. I'm thinking quicker. I'm making decisions quicker. My cognitive abilities, my memory, all that stuff is just, it's a little sharper. And that's what Azeroth stands for. If you guys want to get that in your life, then definitely check them out. Like I said, we've got links in all the descriptions, no matter where you go to listen to our stuff. But it's getazoth.com. And then we've got the link to Amazon for the Azoth stuff there too. In either place, you can use our code ADVICES10. I went a little long on the commercials today, guys, but I hope you maybe even enjoyed it a little bit. I don't know. I'm having fun with this stuff. I hope you guys are too. And I hope that you're reaching all your goals and able to stay focused through this freaky, weird year of 2020. All right, guys. Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome back to Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland. I'm Scott McNally, and we're going to go to our listener question segment of the day. Dave, I've been getting so many questions about HGH Frig. I swear to you, it's literally been like every week now for the last 6 weeks that I get at least one question about it.
Well, first one we've had about it, isn't it?
We what?
It's the first one we've had about it, isn't it?
It may be. It may be. But I mean, I've been getting a lot of conversation about it, a lot of people asking me. I don't know if there's been like a new advertisement, new promotion for it. Regardless, this is from Andrew.
Been around a long time.
I know. That's why I wonder if there's like a new promotion for it, something like that. But Andy Blades, he says, Dave's thoughts on HGH Fragment 167 to 191 for fat loss, dose timing, etc.
Do you know when it was first discovered? Here's some little anecdotal bollocks for you.
Yeah.
1970s.
Really?
Yeah. Huh. And it went into major research in the 1990s.
Okay.
So basically what FRAG is, most of us will be aware that human growth hormone has either 191 or 192 amino acids.
Yeah.
So HGH FRAG is a fragment of that. And the numbers represent the amino acids that the fragment contains. So it contains from 176 to 191. It contains 16 aminos. They don't possess all the properties of growth hormone.
Yeah.
But they do possess the fat burning action. And predominantly that's all it's useful for is fat loss.
I like the recovery.
That's debatable in studies whether there's any impact on that. Now, I'm not saying there isn't, but from a study point of view, there's no evidence.
I've seen it in myself firsthand, you know, using it consistently that I definitely can feel that improvement. I definitely get like a higher, better quality to like skin and hair. I notice that my fingernails grow harder and denser. They grow faster. So I know there's more to it than just the fat loss, you know, I don't know if you need to use like the 10, 12 units like we used to do years back, you know, it used to be on the boards. Like you've talked about, the idea was run as much as you can afford to run. I don't know if that's going to be the answer, but I do feel like it does something. Would you say that? Would you agree
from FRAC?
No. Actual GH.
Oh, no. Yeah. GH. I'm on about FRAC. FRAC does nothing but fat burn.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Sorry. We got his wires crossed. Yeah. No. FRAC, because you've only got a partial sequence, it's only really the sequence of the aminos that affect fat loss. It doesn't have the benefits that growth would have about improved recovery, better skin, better nails, better hair, better sleep, those sort of things.
Yeah, yeah.
Main side effects with FRAC are there's an element of sleepiness, so it does have that impact and it can make you feel tired. Mm. Dosing-wise, you're probably looking at 250 to 500 micrograms a day, maybe twice a day. General run would be 3 months, 2 months, 3 months, and I'd do it fasted. Probably pre-cardio, but I would definitely avoid eating within a good 45 minutes to an hour around it.
Would you suggest it? Will.
Yeah, as a compound.
Yeah.
I've not ever. The problem is it was pretty much abandoned from a research point of view quite some time ago, so there's not much from the science point of view of really sort of in-depth studies into frac and what he's done and how versatile it can be.
Yeah.
So the vast majority of information we have is from people that use it. The problem with anecdotal, as we all know, is that it can be very revealing, but it can also be very misleading. I would say that it should present greater value for money if you're looking at growth for fat loss properties.
Yeah.
Then frag would create better value for money than using growth.
It would be.
Yes.
Because I don't agree. And I think maybe it comes down to the pricing on my growth hormone. But I've gotten, you know, deals, if you can get a good deal, you know, a kit runs, whatever, $150 for a high quality, we'll say a high quality generic. There's going to be variations. And there's going to be variations of, I'm sure, frag, too, you know, the quality you get there. But my thought has always been, why not just use real growth hormone, you know, at a 2 to 3 unit a day range and get all the benefits versus just use frag? Especially for someone that, you know, could benefit, like as you get to be 30, 40 years old, and you could possibly get better recovery and all of that. I think to me that those are all important things. And some of these peptides are so expensive. It's like running CJC with Hexarelin, all that stuff. It becomes just as expensive as running a cheap, you know, high quality generic.
Yeah, you have a point. Regards into how effective is a fat loss agent, I don't think it's anything. I mean, we're not talking something on DMP level.
Oh, God, no. Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's going to be subtle.
Not even a Clen level, right?
Yeah. It's going to be subtle at best.
Yeah.
I've never been a huge fan of peptides. I've always found the hassle, the cost to some degree, far outweighed the results, apart from certain ones that are very standout, so stuff like VPC,
yeah,
you know, and TB. So certain ones have very unique properties that are very standout, and there isn't really an alternative.
Like, yeah.
But with a lot of the growth hormone secretaries, you do have alternatives. But I would have thought pound for pound, frac, if it was just purely fat loss you're looking for. Well, I suppose, again, like you said, it's all down to how much you pay for this shit.
Yeah.
Could be cost effective in that sense. But like you said, with growth hormone, you're going to get added benefits that you wouldn't get with frac because it is so limited in what it can do.
Yeah. Yeah. And I agree with you. You know what? If somebody came to me and they're like, hey, I want to add a compound for fat loss, even growth hormone, frag, growth hormone, either, those are not going to be one of the first things I would suggest. You know,
no, if you said at 55, I don't sleep very well, I'm starting to feel a bit haggard, then I might say, well, you know what, growth hormone, if you've got the money, is actually going to be a good choice.
Yeah, you get a lot out of it then. It could be.
Yeah, you get much more for it. Yes, definitely.
Vincent Ford chimed in here with a kind of an interesting topic. He says, recently on a podcast, both Fuad and Ben Chow said that their libido is higher when on TRT compared to blasting.
Mm-hmm.
You agree with that?
Mm-hmm.
I definitely would too, hands down, no question.
I think most people that run high cycles or even medium cycles that have been using for long periods of time get very little libido boost.
Yeah.
They may get something in the first couple of weeks, but then it certainly dissipates, and if anything, the libido is lower. What always gave me a very good libido was growth hormone.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Oh, yeah.
Huh. Interesting.
Low dose, but long-term use gave me a very high libido.
Hmm.
But yeah, no, I definitely did not find huge libidos when I was running big cycles, and definitely found myself to be much more interested when I was back down at TRT doses or lower doses.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, I found anything like when I test levels, when I take test above 500 milligrams, that's where I start to see a decline. And if I were to go up even higher, like if I were to go to a gram plus add in another compound, then I find that it actually decreases for me. So I've even gone to the doctor, gotten labs done. We've looked at everything and there was like no real answer. It wasn't like my progesterone or prolactin was off or my, you know, estrogen was in range. It didn't make sense.
I think he's potentially just overload.
Yeah.
Same again. I've seen Bloods. There's nothing in the Bloods that tells the story.
Yeah.
And I think it's more rooted in brain chemistry than it is in physical chemistry of your hormone system.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think it's gonad related or penis related. I think it's actually brain chemistry related. And it's something to do with the saturation levels within the brain. And the effects on dopamine and transport proteins and all that sort of stuff, which is super, super complex.
Yeah.
And hurts my head every time I have to delve into it.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck, does it? But, yeah, you know, I do think it's more in that element that the issue arises.
Mm.
But, yeah, I agree 100%.
All right. Let's see here. Jerry Wright asks, I want to know about optimal test levels for training. Mine came back at 1800. What is too much in diminishing returns with side effects, with more side effects?
It depends on the individual and it depends on the duration. You could run, I'm going to go back into compound amounts rather than actual test levels just because it's easier to discuss.
Okay.
So, because UK won't understand US sure. levels and US won't understand UK levels, so we just talk about grammage of gear.
Yeah. Whereas a gram is a gram, whether you're in the UK, Australia, or the US.
Yeah. So you could effectively possibly run 2 gram a test.
Okay.
And feel fantastic and make massive progress and still be making progress in 2 months, 3 months, and then by 3.5 months. It becomes too much because you've been on too long.
Yeah.
You know, and you might then drop down to a lower dose and run a gram for a while and then go back up and it's still too much because you haven't had that time off beforehand that you had the first time around.
Yeah.
So the amount of exposure you've had to the drug and how long your test level's been elevated for can have an impact on progress and feel good factor. In the same way, your own natural sensitivities, people who aromatize at a higher rate naturally, people who have higher body fat will aromatize at a higher rate naturally. That's potentially going to cause more raw retention, more estrogen retention issues. And you may find that a higher level is not as effective for you. Someone who's leaner, who's not been on gear for 12 months, may find that a higher level actually doesn't cause them any issues for an initial period of time. There's so many variables in this that there isn't really a fixed term. My own experience would tend to be that if I had been on low dose or I'd been off for a good period of time, I could actually handle pretty high doses very, very well for as long as two, 3 months. But if I'd been on even moderate doses for an extended period of time and I tried to go high, no, it was shit from day one. And it just seemed to be that as long as I was coming from a clean-ish background and a decent amount of downtime, I could really handle what would be classed as the old shit cycles. I could respond to shit cycles really, really well. So for those that don't know what shit means, it's super high intensity cycles.
Okay.
Basically, mega dose blasts for a short period of time.
I don't think that's popular nowadays.
That's an old school thing, is that? Yeah, that's an old school thing, is shit.
Man,
I think that's Morrison thing, actually.
Guys were, at one point, when I was early on with using gear, they were doing like a cycle where for 21 days you would take 1 cc of Sustanon every day. And then for the next 21 days, it was supposed to have been like built up. And so it was kind of like a 40-day cycle.
Yeah. I think that was a spin-off from Borison's sort of stuff, Paul Borison.
Yeah. I don't know his stuff.
Oh, look him up.
Yeah. Did he do like high doses?
He invented T5s.
Oh, okay.
He was nuts, mate, but in a good way. Paul's an English guy. He was, I believe, if I get my history right, he was the original formulator for biohazard and chemical nutrition.
Okay.
CMP.
Yeah.
And then he left. He launched in the States. He had some business arrangement in Harrison. It all went a bit sour, but that was because of Paul's mismanagement and misappropriation of funds, I think, was going on as well.
Oh.
But he had some very interesting ideas, some of which were way ahead of everybody else.
Okay.
He talked about insulin very early on before anyone else did. He talked about growth hormone early on before anyone else did. Some of his cycles were extreme.
No kidding. Huh.
They're very extreme. And unfortunately, younger Paul was a different man to older Paul. And as time went on, Paul started to, I suppose the only fair way of putting it is, lose a little bit of his grip on reality.
Is he with us anymore?
No,
he's not. It didn't sound like he was, based off of what you're saying.
No. But when you read into his stuff, there's I don't know if you'd say there's genius interdispersed with madness, or there's madness interdispersed with genius. I don't know which way you'd look at it. But very well worth the read, just to see the way he looked at things.
He
had a quite good way of explaining things as well.
That's important.
He did have a knack for that.
Yeah, that's important too, like for the entertainment value of learning from someone, I think, is enjoying the way they share their message. All right, Rob Taylor says, to gain size in legs, is it better to train legs twice a week but have one day focused on quads and the next on hams, still hitting both each workout and also nailing abductors and calves each time? Now, I know Rob, I believe, is possibly in his 60s. I believe so. I know he's here in the Detroit area. He posted a picture of like an old hot rod you'd see like on Happy Days TV show.
Very nice.
And I know he's getting ready to compete too in the fall.
Personally, I think you have to be an incredibly special type of human being to effectively train the whole of your lower body in one session.
That's a good way of putting it. I like that.
I think if you're going to train, and by far legs are the hardest body part to train, and the reason so is they are the biggest muscle grouping, and as a result of that, they can endure the most amount of load and work, and they generate the most amount of discomfort and pain.
Oh, God, yeah, they do.
Without doubt. I have no issue, and I personally would recommend splitting legs into doing a quad day and a hamstring day.
Yeah.
I would put my compounds in with my quad day, so you'd get a little bit of a carryover into hamstring when you do your compound movements on quad day.
Okay.
And I, again, would have no issue with training quads and hamstrings twice a week. I like that high frequency.
Okay, are you saying training them each individually twice a week?
Yes.
So you have four workouts for legs?
Yes.
Wow, okay, that's a lot.
It is, but it's a very enduring muscle group that can take a shitload of work.
I don't know if I could do it.
The only negative is if you're a very low rep heavy lifter.
Okay.
Because the potential loads you can move with legs are so high that they will trash your central nervous system very, very quickly.
You're right, right.
So as long as you're a typical bodybuilding style where you're in the eights and above rep ranges, then you can really hit them hard and quite regular. I mean, I've never been a big, big high volume person for legs, so even, you know, I'd look at somewhere around 16 sets for quads, 8 to 10, 12 sets maybe for hamstrings, and do that twice a week. That would be my approach.
Okay.
Because I've always found that to try and maintain intensity, high intensity on legs is hard, and I always responded with a more sharp, sharp shock sort of effect, but doing it more regularly.
Okay.
Because I couldn't train that way for extended periods of time on legs, just no way.
Yeah.
So to answer his question, frequency of training is really based on recovery.
Yeah.
But I've always found legs to be pretty durable when it comes to that side of things.
I found I've gone back and forth. You know, initially starting training, I did like everybody else, where I did like a first day. Well, through a lot of my bodybuilding, I'll say I did the 5 day split. Legs were hit once a day. And I found that by splitting them up, I was able to put more focus into a hamstring on one day, more into the quad on the other. It seemed to make sense to me. And the key for me is being able to recover, you know, because if I do a really hard leg day, I mean, really hard, they can be so sore, you know, if you really push, you can be so sore that it's hard to walk, you know. And then, you know, my ability to recover from that, it's like finding a balance now. So nowadays I do push-pull legs. And I just train when I'm ready. So I may do one workout push. I may do pull the next. I may take the day off. I don't know. But then I always do the next workout, you know, when I'm ready.
In the sequence, yeah.
Yeah. And so that might mean that I train legs twice a week sometimes. And a lot of times I will focus on one quad session and then one more hamstring focused session. Now they're going to still hit both, you know, quad and ham in both workouts, but one will be more focused than the other. I found that that works really good for me, and legs are pretty strong for me at this point. I think that the key at his age is going to be recovery. You know, what can you recover from and get back and do it again? John Meadows made a really cool point where he would say that he would, you know, and you know what? Brandon Curry said this too. Brandon Curry this season, he said he's training legs whenever they're recovered. So he'll train legs, then do another body part, do another body part if he needs to do another. But basically, when legs are recovered, that's going to be the next workout. I think that that could be a method.
How are you judging recovery?
Recovery for me is that we can say like that when the soreness is gone, when the strength is back.
See, I disagree with the soreness is gone.
Okay.
I do agree, but I've found recovery has always been very difficult to judge.
Yeah.
I've trained, I mean, this is only me personally, and obviously everybody's different, but I've trained for extended periods of time when I've been training a body part again and it's still been sore from the previous workout.
Yeah.
And I've developed.
Okay.
As a natural, I don't think that's an option. Mm. But as an assisted athlete, I think you do have that option. Mm.
I think that things get overtrained a lot, though, just in general.
I mean,
I think if he's doing one leg workout, he definitely could do more than that, you know?
But then my setup was always very strict as well in that, so I might be training... So I train chest, and I might do quite literally, in total, 14 sets on chest.
Okay.
Across three exercises. So chest day was due again 3 days later. And if I was still sore, I was still going to be training chest because I'd limited my volume anyway.
Okay.
So to me, I controlled those elements rather than having that very vague and easily influenced benchmark of, well, I'm recovered or no, I'm not recovered.
Okay.
And I judged it more on progression.
Okay.
So as long as I was progressing, I would continue with the frequency. If I felt I wasn't progressing, I had two choices. I could back off on the intensity or I could add in an extra rest day. But I found that as long as I was on cycle, I did progress, so I just continued hammering it. But that might have an element to do with that I am naturally a fat fuck. So you tend to find, but you do tend to find that people are naturally lean don't seem to be able to endure the same amount of workload that someone who's naturally fat.
Okay.
So, but like I say, it's I've always found that judging recovery one a bit of a difficult one to really regulate, because from personal experience and experience with clients as well, I found clients that can still, on quite regular basis, train a body part when they're still sore from the previous time and still progress.
Let me take this in a little bit of a different direction. So right now we're focusing on how often should you train. Let's look at how do you train, because I found that for me, I had trained legs extensively. And, you know, went into my shows for the first, like, I remember there was a year that I was like, oh, I'm really working on legs. I'm really working on back. These things are going to improve. And I got on stage and my legs didn't seem to improve as much as I would have liked them to. Then I changed the way I trained. I kind of retooled my whole squat form and I started getting like better contractions, slower negatives, all that stuff. And then my legs just blew up and it was night and day. So I could take that same shitty training that I was doing once a week and do that five times a week and it wouldn't make a difference. But it, you know, when I changed the training itself and I actually got activation out of the muscle, for that was an issue for me. So I wanted to focus on that as well. So yeah, maybe there's a thing with timing, but also let's look at just how do you train? Why are they weak to begin with, you know?
Very, 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 very good point is that I think if you're getting pure stimulus, you will probably find that you can train much more frequently. And then the stimulus will add up over the period of the week or 2 weeks or whatever it is. Where if you're getting excellent stimulus, you may find you don't have to train that body part as frequent because you've done the job the first time around.
Yeah.
A really ballpark, stupid figures, never realistic. But if you got 50% of stimulus in one workout, then potentially you could do two workouts a week and get 100% stimulus.
Sure, yeah.
If you got 100% stimulus in one workout, then you don't need any more workload because you've got it all in that one session.
Yeah.
The one thing I was obsessed with, which sounds a bit macabre, I suppose, in a way, was generating pain.
Okay.
I was literally obsessed with it.
Yeah.
And I would experiment and experiment and experiment in ways to generate more pain.
In the muscle.
Yeah.
The target.
Yeah,
so you're focusing on that target muscle and you're asking yourself, how can I make this hurt more, basically?
If I didn't come out of a workout that had been excruciatingly painful in a good way, then I felt I'd failed.
Yeah.
I always used to be incredibly frustrated with shoulders because I never got DOMS with shoulders.
Huh. Yeah, it's a tough one too, isn't it?
Yeah. But I used to, legs was, I was particularly bad on it for legs and I grew a decent pair of, well, maybe not the best shaped legs, but definitely plenty of meat on them.
And you're very strong. I think what did I see you squatting? I think I saw a picture of you squatting, was it 6 plates or how many plates?
I've done 340 kilo for reps on squat.
340 kilo. What is that in pounds, Dave?
That is just short 750.
It's a lot, dude. You do that for a single?
No, sets of six.
What? You have a picture of that somewhere. Get that to me.
I have that squatting picture is 340. It's 25s and 20s.
Okay. Yeah, send that to me after the show. I'll drop it in right here for the for the people watching on.
Yeah, I've done, and that's knee wraps and a belt, nothing else.
Okay.
Oh, no, actually, I don't think did I have a belt on for that? I don't think I even had a belt on for that, actually.
Yeah.
I got into the stage where I couldn't squat with a belt. I hated it.
Really?
Yeah, I used to hate squatting with a belt. But, yeah, I'd intensity, well, in the sense of muscle stimulation, intensity from muscle stimulation, not particularly intensity from drop sets and all that. Yeah. You can drop set and drop set and drop set, but if you're not hitting the muscle, you're just wasting your fucking time.
Right.
But if you're getting correct muscle stimulus, you're going to get a large amount of pain.
Yeah.
I mean, it did get to the point where people wouldn't train with me because it was just hurt too much.
Yeah.
but it was, I don't know, I just... And it was something that I don't think I could even repeat that style of training now. My life depended on it.
Yeah.
It was of its moment in my training history, you know what I mean? But it was something. And even when I was doing the UC stuff, I didn't train as hard as I had done the first time around.
Yeah.
I trained a lot harder the first time around, but maybe it was just because that's the way I was introduced to training.
See what else we have here. Okay. I'll move on. Kyle Becker asks, keep hearing more and more about people running low dose T3 while cutting. My question is, doesn't T3 suppress natural production of T3? So wouldn't you need to run it at a moderately high dose to have an effect?
Right. So low dose T3 if it's replicating natural levels, will still create a higher T3 level when you're in a long-term deficit, because in a long-term deficit, naturally, your T3 levels drop.
Okay.
So potentially the logic behind it, I've never asked anyone that's doing it, would be the fact that they know their T3 levels are going to start to drop when they're dieting. Mm-hmm. So it just maintains a constant T3 level.
That's what I always try to do.
Mm-hmm.
And thankfully, you know what? We talked about this a month ago, maybe a little bit longer. And I'm thinking that one of my guys that I work with, I've worked with him for like 4 or 5 years now. He decided he would take T3 this year for the first time ever. We're keeping it at a very low dose. And guess what? He's always had to grind and grind and grind, eat like a bikini girl diet to get lean. No matter what we do, no matter how big he gets, it's always been a struggle. We added in just a small amount of T3 and boom, everything is coming together so nice now.
Yeah. So generally, that's your reason, because your natural T levels drop and you're in a deficit.
Yeah. It's kind of like your natural test levels drop when you're dieting. So running a little bit of test will make a big difference.
And T3 is a bit of a weird one, because up to a certain level, it's quite beneficial even in gaining. And then you go over that level and it becomes quite negative in gaining. And
yeah.
I think it's about 60 micrograms is the threshold for where it goes from being improving protein assimilation to actually having a negative impact and becoming catabolic.
Okay.
Yeah. I'd have to double check that, but I think that's right.
I never even go really that high a lot of times. Like I might go to 50 with people occasionally, you know, if needed, but if I can stay even lower, I'll stay even lower, you know.
It's not a drug personally I've ever done much with.
Yeah. It's been for my dieting personally, I've gotten a lot of response out of it. Like for my own physique, I've gotten a ton of response out of it. I would say for me, it's probably the best fat burner.
When I've dieted in general, I've dieted fat burner 3.
Yeah.
Generally. I used DMP once just to see what it was like.
Ooh, yeah.
Never again.
It's not fun.
Never again. Fucking hated that. That was awful. But generally, I've not had a huge use of fat burners. It's something I don't have a lot of personal experience with.
Okay. Let's see here. I think that's all the questions we had on our thread. And then we do have questions over here, too. What is this one? This is from another one from Vincent Ford. He says, what's your opinion on steroid users abusing steroids when the gyms reopen in the UK? I'm hearing a lot of rumors of the 6th of July from local gyms following Boris' announcement due the 4th of July. Who's Boris?
Our prime minister, you moron.
What's a prime minister? Is that like your president?
Yes.
I thought you guys had a king over there. Didn't you have a queen or something? Isn't she?
No, we have a queen, yes.
So the queen rules everything with an iron fist.
No.
She goes around in her chariot. You have to, if you see her, you have to bow, right?
We do have things like electricity and petrol cars now. We have advanced a little bit.
Do you have to bow if you see her on the streets and kiss her, like her shoes and stuff?
You know what? I don't actually know if you're supposed to bow or curtsy if you meet a royal, as in you have to do it as part of law,
yeah.
or you know, like one of these really old laws from centuries back, or if it's just what is regarded as the right thing to do.
Yeah, it's the princess and queen wave.
Yes, you're a proper queen, you.
Cheerio.
The rumor is that the gyms may potentially be opening on the 4th of July. I'm not sure I really understand the rest of his question.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. I mean, okay.
What's my thoughts about steroid abuse when the gyms open? Well, no different to my thoughts about steroid abuse when the gyms were closed.
I got one for you then, Dave. I'll make this a little more specific. I'm going to spin this question, turn it into something else maybe. I don't know. Or maybe I'm going to illustrate what he wants. I've got a guy. So gym's just reopened for him. This dude's making great progress, by the way. We started working together. He signed up like right before the quarantine. He's lost a tremendous amount of fat. He's stuck with it. like lifting with rubber bands, milk jugs full of water, you know, every terrible idea you could possibly think of that you have to do because there is no gym. He's done and he's gotten good results. Now the gym's opening back up and he's got some trend that he wants to run. I told him, like, let's chill. Let's get back in the gym. Your strength is going to go up naturally for some time. He's already on test. I was like, you're going to keep climbing on your own. You don't need trend yet. So maybe he's going for that. Should people just start training again and boom, jump right into a 3-gram cycle?
I would personally use as much as the natural rebound, as the natural sort of beginner gains you're going to get from having access to more weight. Because most people have been training effectively cardio-based stuff because they just don't have the resistance at home.
Yeah.
So I would use the gyms to get back into hard, heavy training and to exploit as much rebound as you can from doing that before I'd consider drugs. I mean, I've had a couple of clients that have actually done really, really well in the lockdown. A girl of mine, she's come off cycle because of the lockdown.
Yeah.
And she's now heavier and bigger than when she finished her cycle. Same condition, no real changes there.
Okay.
And obviously we're not sure about strength because she's got a limited comparison.
Yeah.
But we were discussing the cycle option today and I said, well, get back in there, get going, let's see where you are.
Yeah.
And then we'll make a decision based on that.
Okay.
But then I've had a few clients that have had full access to gyms throughout, so it's been just regular day for them, really.
Hmm.
You know, those people that go to gyms instead of training at home.
Yeah. I've done that before. I'm familiar with that idea. Our gyms are all opening back up over here.
When do they open?
This week. They already started to. So, yeah.
Because your state's a little bit behind a lot of them, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We'll see what happens. They're talking about, people are saying this isn't a second wave that we're seeing. This is still part of the first wave, but they're seeing increases. So who knows whether that'll last. I'm still looking for a good pair of dumbbells or set of dumbbells for home.
See, everybody's jumping around over here that there's no second wave, that all these protests and VE celebrations haven't caused a spike, but we generally focus on death tolls. We don't really focus on infection rates because our testing is so shit.
Mm. Okay.
So I don't know if there has been any reflection from the gatherings or not, to be quite honest.
I think that's all of our questions, Dave. I think that's it. I think things are going good. We've been getting good feedback from the YouTube page. Guys, if you haven't subscribed to the YouTube page, do us a favor. Hit the subscription button, and if you click the notification bell, that will allow you to see all of our updates every time we put a new program out. And all of that helps us. Anytime that you subscribe, that you like post, that you comment, all that stuff helps to boost us in the algorithm so that the shows get showing more and more people see it. So we appreciate everybody's support, and thank you, everybody, for following along with the live feed. Dave Crossland for another episode of Drugs and Stuff. We'll see you guys soon.
Bye-bye.